Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. On the programme today, my guest is Peter Ross. He's an award-winning journalist based in Glasgow. He's a 9 times winner at the Scottish Press Awards, and he's previously been shortlisted for the Orwell Journalism Prize. His latest book strikes a particular chime with me. I absolutely love graveyards. I'm in them almost every single day, and his book is called A Tomb with a View. It looks at the bizarre and fascinating stories of the UK's graveyards, and there are many of them. Peter, what drew you to this subject?
Well, I think there were a couple of things. When I was a small boy, I used to absolutely delight in hanging around in a graveyard in Stirling called the Old Town Cemetery. I think there was just something innate in me that liked that place, because in some ways it wasn't very child-friendly. You know, graveyards were much more run down in those days. There was lots of vandalism and graffiti. But for me, it was always a place of tremendous fascination. I think it's probably true to say that I actually learned to read partly by hanging around in that graveyard. I would look at those unfamiliar words on the stones, like unto and remembrance, and phrases like suffer little children, and kind of wonder what they meant and trace them with my fingers. And that was definitely part of, you know, my kind of learning to read. That was along with Beatles lyrics, I think. The graveyards and Beatles lyrics. So yeah, it was definitely something from my childhood that first drew me to them.
You've had some amazing, amazing reviews from people. I mean, Hilary Mantel, Andrew O'Hagan, Robert McFarlane, Ian Rankin, all of these people going on about how this is just, it's more than just talking about graveyards. It's a book of joy. It's a book of love. It's about the lost and the gone. Hilary Mantel talks about how it goes from Flanders Field to Milltown to Kensal Green, and that you show us how cemeteries are gyms for the imagination. Can you expand on that?
Yes. Well, I think it's certainly true that love is the great theme of this book. And I always knew that this book, which was ostensibly about death, was going to be actually about life. I was determined that it wasn't going to be a history book that just kind of wrote about the 10 famous dead guys in any particular cemetery. It was going to be very much about how these places live, how the dead live in our memories and in our lives. And also how graveyards are important to the people who go there to mourn lost people, but also who go there because they enjoy visiting these places, or they work in them as grave diggers, etc., or they volunteer in them. But it was only really as I worked on the book that I came to realise that really the book about death that was meant to be a book about life was really a book about love. And what I mean by that is I had experiences where I spoke with people who had lost people very close to them, husbands and fathers and so on, and who remembered them in those graveyards. But also the love that, for example, an Islamic undertaker in London feels for the community that they've been serving for generations, or the love that a gravedigger would feel for the people who sometimes he meets before he comes to bury them. So very much it's a positive book. It's not, I hope, a bleak book or a frightening book about death. It's very much about human connection.
Tell us how it's structured.
It's structured, I guess, thematically. I mean, it covers a lot of different parts of Britain, like Scotland, England, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, and also into parts of mainland Europe. I go to Belgium and to France. But more than that, it's structured sort of thematically. So, for example, I have a chapter on unmarked graves, and that includes both the Killeany burials of Ireland, which are the sort of unofficial graves of children who died before they could be baptised and therefore couldn't be buried in consecrated ground. And that chapter goes from there to the Crossbones graveyard in London, which is a graveyard where in the medieval period, sex workers would be buried because they couldn't be buried in consecrated ground. And it's become a sort of flashpoint for almost a sort of benevolent cult around that graveyard where people go there and remember and celebrate outcasts of all kinds. So really, the book is much more structured thematically than it is chronologically or geographically.
I'm interested in the different feelings you get from different graveyards. So for instance, if you take Flanders, it's a very, very sad and melancholy place. And although those people would probably have been long dead now anyway, there's still an active feeling of grief. Whereas if you go somewhere like, I don't know, Highgate Cemetery, the old side, where nobody's been buried for a long time. So again, you have graves that are very, very old. You don't feel that sense of mourning.
Yeah, I think it depends. Flanders, the war graves of Europe are fascinating, I think, because they feel to me almost like a celebration of war to some extent. I know they're not intended to be that, but because they're so uniform and beautiful and peaceful, they almost mask the horror of the Great War and the Second World War. So I have a sort of ambivalent feeling about those graveyards. I think, you know, I'd like to see a grave, or I'd like to see a war cemetery that had Wilfred Owen's Dulce et Decorum Est carved across the entrance to it. But I wouldn't want that for the grave where my own great uncle is buried. It's interesting. It's almost like intellectually, I want it to be much more realistic about what actually happened. But, you know, in my heart, I want there to be the kind of compassion that those graveyards offer. And in terms of the sort of great London cemeteries like Highgate, I think those are, I mean, they can be sad places because they still have people buried in them now. But in terms of the kind of great tombs of the past, it feels like you're walking around almost a theatrical set. These are great, dramatic, swaggering places that sort of express Victorian wealth and almost pomposity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so many extraordinary graves in those places. And you delve into some personal stories of some pretty remarkable people. So, for instance, tell us about Phoebe Hessel.
Yeah, so Phoebe Hessel is a woman who is buried in the cemetery of St. Nicholas's, Brighton. And she is a woman who was born in the reign of Queen Anne and lived through the reigns of several Georges. So she had an incredibly long life. At a time when people didn't live very long. And it's especially remarkable because the one very well-known thing that she did during her life was to disguise herself as a man and go soldiering, going to fight in the wars of the British Army abroad, apparently so that she could keep in the company of her sweetheart. So I think what's interesting about Phoebe is that she joined up in a clandestine way for a job that might have expected to kill her rather soon. And in fact, she lived this incredibly long life. And she's remembered, her story is remembered on that gravestone in the churchyard of St. Nicholas's.
It's wonderful to have so much information on a gravestone because often it isn't there. I remember very recently trying to get a stone approved by a church for my parents. And we wanted to put a sort of barcode on it, which could link to an internet page. And the church refused it, saying that even if they had approved the text we wanted to put, there was nothing to say that we wouldn't change that text in the future. But of course, if it's carved in stone, it's always there.
Yeah, that's remarkable, actually. I think I do applaud your attempt to do something really original and interesting there. It's fascinating.
Yeah, sadly, not allowed by the Anglicans, though.
Well,
tell me more about some of your favourite stories that you've uncovered during the research for this book.
I think one of the most remarkable things was the story of a man called Shane McTomas, who was a tour guide at Glasnevin Cemetery in Dublin. He was, when he died a few years ago, his passing was compared to a library burning down because his knowledge of Glasnevin Cemetery and Irish history was so great. And he was almost, his kind of role in that graveyard was as a tour guide and also the historian of the graveyard. But really, when he went out on tours, it was almost like a star walking out on stage. He was one of these people that was just so charismatic and could really bring the graveyard and Irish history to life. They made a film a few years ago about Glasnevin Cemetery called 1 Million Dubliners, in which he was absolutely the star. But during the making of that film, he died during the making of it, which is only very subtly revealed at the end of the film. And I became fascinated by what had happened to him. It turned out very sadly that he had taken his own life. And I wanted to try to learn more about Shane and the sort of person he was and the relationship between the person and the police and the way that he shaped the way Glasnevin Cemetery was seen, but also the way that Glasnevin Cemetery shaped the way he was seen and the way he thought of himself, because he'd had problems with depression and so forth. And I'm very glad that his family and friends were willing to sort of tell me his story. So I feel pleased with that story, because I think I've been able to, I hope I've been able to do him justice.
Mm. Tell me, Peter, what do you feel about ghosts?
I don't think I believe in them, but I feel a bit nervous about saying that. You know what I mean? I kind of want to keep my fingers crossed when I say that. Maybe I do believe in them. I feel very ambivalent about that. And certainly, I don't find graveyards to be spooky places. I think when I was a kid, I used to enjoy that association between graveyards and the supernatural. But when I walk in them now, that's not how I feel about them. But I wanted to kind of acknowledge that link in the book. So in the book, I go to the graves of three ghost story writers, the most famous of whom is M.R. James, who's buried in Eton. So I don't necessarily believe in it myself, but I definitely wanted to explore it.
Yeah. This our studio here at Midori House is right next to a plague pit, I guess. I think there are more than 100,000 people buried right next to us. And of course, the studio's in the basement. And quite often, people have to work here overnight. And I'm told that it has an atmosphere.
I mean, I find that sort of thing absolutely convincing. You know, I believe you when you tell me that. I mean, London's an incredible city for that sort of thing, isn't it? Because it's absolutely built upon the bones of the dead. You know, London's got so many layers of history, and because it had, you know, the experience of the plague, there are so many mass graves right beneath the city. It's a really fascinating place if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, we use cemeteries for all manner of things now. It's not just for burying the dead. For instance, Bristol is a wedding venue for goths.
Yeah. I mean, Arnos Vale Cemetery in Bristol is probably the most beautiful Victorian garden cemetery outside London, I would say. And it was a place that had fallen into terrible repair in the 1990s, and, you know, was close to being kind of closed down and lost, really. And it was kind of brought back into the ownership of the Friends of Arnos Vale, and they've had to find ways to generate money to kind of pay for its upkeep, because it still is a place where you can get buried. And so to do that, they give tours of the graveyard, but also they've adapted it to other uses. So you can go to the theatre there, you can go and see films there, there's a cafe. And I think most spectacularly, you can get married there. So I went to the wedding of a couple in that cemetery on Halloween last year. And I just, they weren't themselves goths, although the cemetery does get a lot of goths. And it didn't feel to me to be inappropriate for people to get married in a graveyard. Because I think, I remember seeing them after the ceremony walking through the graveyard, and their friends had formed a little tunnel and were throwing confetti over them, rose petals, I think it was. And some of those were kind of drifting past them and onto the grave of a man and a wife who had been married in the Victorian era. And it just really struck me that this was absolutely the circle of life. You know, so many men and women were buried there who had loved each other and who had had their time together and whose time had passed. And now it was the turn of Sean and Liz to go through that experience. Mm. So I thought it was actually beautiful rather than, you know, comical or anything like that.
Do you think that we're showing disrespect to the dead by using graveyards for other purposes? I mean, I think my local graveyard, Hampstead Cemetery, says dogs must be kept on a lead, and their whole thing is that the dogs obviously mustn't romp over the graves, or worse, wee on them. I feel like people in the ground are not here, for one, but two, wouldn't they just rejoice in an animal having fun?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I have a kind of feeling, although I don't necessarily believe in ghosts, I have a feeling of the dead being somehow present and aware. And I'm not quite sure, I can't really articulate that properly or explain it thoroughly, but I do kind of feel that they are around. And I do not think for a moment that they would grudge a dog being walked in the cemetery, or in the case of my local cemetery, they would grudge someone having a bottle of beer or a glass of wine at the top of the hill and amongst the graves. You know, I think they are probably quite convivial people and probably quite glad of the company. I think as long as you scoop up your poop and take your empty bottles back home, then it's fine.
Yeah, I haven't knowingly pooped in a graveyard yet. Finally, where would you like to be buried?
Well, I think having worked on this book and travelled around Britain, looking at different cemeteries, it's a bit like when you go to a car showroom and you look at different models and you have time to sort of consider what you might want for yourself. And although I'm quite attracted to the grand Victorian memorials of Highgate and the like, I don't think I would really want anyone to be necessarily coming to spend that much money or having to feel they had to visit that grave. I'm quite attracted to the idea of natural burial, that idea that you're wrapped in a shroud and you're laid to rest on a hillside somewhere, and that's you. You're in a nice, quiet, safe spot forever, with nothing really to mark your grave but some sort of little stone. That would do me.
Mm. And I love the idea of perhaps planting something and then your ashes or your body just fertilising this wonderful living thing.
Yeah, just on a compost level, I absolutely applaud that.
Peter, thank you so much. So interesting. What a wonderful book. Thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you.
Tomb with a View by Peter Ross is published by Headline and it's out now. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.